It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday the 7th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Camera maker GoPro is one of those companies that's not like the others. Among a gaggle of social network platforms, messaging apps, and e-commerce websites that have all had initial public offerings this year, the hardware maker has managed to base jump through the crevasse, catch the wave, almost like the camera-happy daredevils who love it. And through big ad dollars and its evangelists, GoPro has become this rugged and popular product that people love to use in an era when phones are usually the preferred device for sharing photos and video. This week, a live streaming website called, as it happens, Livestream has made it possible for GoPro cameras to broadcast live video. So now if you've got the right kind of GoPro and a smartphone in your pocket or jumpsuit or parachute, you can broadcast your adventures online as they happen. Lindsay Turrentine of CNET says the unedited live experience can be a draw.
This is a technology update from Livestream for streaming any really cool live event where you just don't know what's going to happen yet and creates this storytelling tension, right? Imagine a bunch of longboard skateboarders taking a trip down a very steep hill with GoPros on and you are just not sure if they're going to wipe out or not. That's a pretty exciting proposition.
Okay, but it's not all snowboarders and surfers. Turntime points out that GoPros, which take higher quality video than your average phone, could be used more for other kinds of drama.
This is also becoming important in protest situations. Live streaming was instrumental to documenting some of the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri earlier this year. So any situation in which you really want a truthful accounting of what's happening live and you can get that stream out, it's going to be really important.
Lindsay Turrentine, Editor-in-Chief of Reviews at CNET. You may have heard that Google is planning to hire security guards as actual employees instead of contractors. News in the same vein this week. Bus drivers that bring workers to Facebook offices in Silicon Valley apparently want to unionize. Teamsters union representatives are saying this week that drivers for the company Loop Transportation are underpaid and overworked. Bus drivers who bring employees to tech companies in the Bay Area work mostly for third-party companies. Facebook has yet to comment. There's an aha moment in Nicholas Carr's new book, The Glass Cage, Automation and Us. Carr is describing an academic study, now a few decades old, in which researchers discover something interesting. They're interviewing people at home and at work. At work, people can't wait to clock out, and at home, they dread returning to work. But by many metrics, people are actually happier on the job, fulfilled, learning, progressing. And in a world where the main goal of technology seems to be reducing the work we do, making it more convenient, Carr thinks maybe we should take a different tack. Nicholas Carr, thanks for chatting with me.
My pleasure. Thanks.
You talk a lot about how our technology isn't often really designed to work in concert with us as humans. How do you fix that?
You know, the only way to counteract what I think is our misguided desire to free ourselves from all effort by throwing everything onto the back of the computer is by being more conscious of how that instinct to escape hard work actually affects our experience of life. And I think most of us, if we really thought about it, know that it's really when we're being challenged and when we're really immersed in a task or a job, and it doesn't have to be a job for pay, but that's when we feel like we are experiencing life in some better and more fulfilling way. So if we were just more conscious of how technology influences our actual experience of life, we might make smarter choices about the kinds of gadgets we buy and the kinds of software we use.
Is this also what you're talking about when you talk about this difference between tech-centered automation and human-centered automation?
It is, because I think that feeling that we have inside of ourselves to kind of let the technology do it also happens to be the guiding philosophy of most of the software programmers and engineers who are creating these systems. And so when they begin to automate something, the first thing they ask themselves is, well, what can the computer do? And what's left over, we'll give that to those unreliable humans.
The scraps from the table.
And it turns out that those scraps tend to be things we're really bad at, you know, watching screens for anomalies. And then, oh yeah, you also have to be the final line of defense because if the technology fails, you're going to have to step in and fix the problems. And basically that sets us up to fail.
So I really like some of the interludes that you put in the book about your own experiences using technology. And one of them is about you playing this video game, Red Dead Redemption, which I have also played. It's a Western. You sort of get to be a cowboy. What did you learn playing that game about how video games can actually be different from some of this other technology that we've been talking about?
Most of the personal software we use is designed so we're never challenged. When you play a good video game, it's exactly the opposite. You have to repeat difficult challenges over and over again until you master them, and then you get higher level challenges. You get lots of feedback. Your character dies. Kind of visceral feedback. And so video games actually serve as a good model where the software is designed to engage us in an activity, raise us up to new and higher levels of skills, rather than, simply saying, I'll do everything for you.
He's the author of The Glass Cage, Automation and Us. Nicholas, thank you very much for talking with me.
Thanks. My pleasure.
All right. So help me out. What's a tech innovation you think isn't actually making our lives easier? I got to say, I'm not impressed by the self-checkout kiosks in the grocery store, and I don't think they're impressed with me either. Tweet us your thoughts. We're at Marketplace Tech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.